Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, I'm John Stewart, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
Hey, I'm Nick DiMatteo, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 25 of Music Is Not a Genre. Wait for it. Imagine the hand gestures if you're just listening. M-X-G. Almost better than YMCA. No, not really. This week's episode, again, thank you as always for watching and listening. If you're only listening, go to youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre and watch every episode of this podcast. If you are watching, hello, nice to see you. This is one of the shirts, as in last week's episode, I'm wearing shirts that I'm selling in the shirt store, which also sells mugs. And you can listen to this if you just prefer to listen and not watch on any streaming service. And that's how that is. And quick announcement, as we'll be saying for a little while, probably the rest of this season, this may be the last season of this podcast, but if you can donate just $1 a month at patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, you can save this podcast. And there are people I have found recently for whom this podcast actually means something. Of course, it means something to me and my lovely people on Patreon and my friends and family, but I would really like you to be a part of that. So patreon.com/musicisnotagenre for a limited time. You could join for $1 a month. And there's a reason why I'm spending a little extra time saying that in this episode, because this is a fan episode. It is the freewheeling catch-up machine number 7, Fan Economics. I always have a subtitle. You know, it doesn't really matter because the main thing with these episodes is this is stuff that you said to me and I am repeating it to you. So you know that I listen. I actually love when you comment, whether it is on the social or on YouTube or whatever it is, I absolutely love it. And the reason why I'm doing it now, again, and not the end of the season, that I'm going to be doing more catch-up episodes this season than ever before is because there have been more comments than ever before, which is very exciting to me. And also, I've more recently done a few episodes on economics, 2 podfasts and my special announcement and the announcements I'm making at the beginning of each episode about Patreon, both within and without the music world. I'm talking about that because I think it's important and I think it does weigh on artists, musicians, music, even music consumers more than you might realize. And since this show relies on the subtitle, which is Fan Economics, which is, again, I can't continue producing this show without your help, unfortunately. That's why I created that subtitle. But let's jump right in, because what you really want to hear and what I really want to tell you are the fan comments. So there's a podcast out there called The Metal Podcast. Yeah. And The Metal Podcast said about Music Is Not a Genre, excellent. Love your passion for music. Great channel. Thank you, Metal Podcast. I love you guys. I will watch your show someday. So that gets to this section, which is about songs that I have posted on youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre. CKA the man commented on my piano version of Prince's Mountains. Said, interesting, this song doesn't lend itself well to a full piano arrangement, despite having a piano part. Nice effort, sounds good. I love this song, consider it one of his best musically. Certainly there are a lot to choose from, but this one resonated with me when I was a teenager more than some of the bigger hits. Which is why I chose it. I wanted to choose a more obscure Prince song. Bluegrass Diggers 9030 also commenting on my version of mountains. This was so much fun to watch. You need to take this on the road. Wherever you are, hire me. She-Wolf Cub 3 also commenting on mountains. Parade is his best album, in my opinion. Great cover. Thank you, She-Wolf Cub 3. And as I said to you, I think I might agree. As much as I love so many of Prince's albums, that one just hit me in a way that I will never let go of. Cadillac Poe Jones 7316 on the my version of Oh Sheila, which I did acoustically. Her, or I think her, maybe his comment is, heart. Thank you very much for that. That may be my favorite comment of all these. Renato Gonclave's Reordinary World. I did a version of Ordinary World for my Patreon supporters and decided of the many, 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 many exclusive videos you get on Patreon, I released that one into the wild. And it's gotten a lot of great responses here on youtube.com/appmusicisnotagenre. The guy said, you did not show the guitar, but the vocal is too loud. Sorry. And I said, thanks for watching. You know, and I don't think I understood the comment. I thought he said you have exaggerated the vocal, and I thought he meant how I sung, but he just was talking about levels, because it turns out he said it because I play the guitar. He plays the guitar, and he wanted to see what I was doing on the guitar so he could do it too for this song, and that kind of criticism may help me figure out new things from other people's perspectives. Like, I tend to think people want to hear the vocals more as opposed to the guitar. Maybe they should be more equal, you know, things like that. So thank you for that comment. That was actually very helpful. Patrick, my friend Patrick from the George Winston episode regarding Ordinary World. Hey, Nick, this is fantastic. Really great guitar playing too, which he is a great pianist. So for him to say that is really a cool compliment. Now, my song, I've released several songs. My band Rec, REC, has released 4 singles now as of this episode, and coming up on a 5th very soon. My bandmate from Prefab 4, Rich Berta, on my first single from the upcoming album, Kite to Camden, All on Me, said, nice job, well done. Also for that song, both of these people were actually featured as interview guests on this show. If you look up the interview playlist on youtube.com/appmusicisnotagenre, you'll get to see their interviews. Rich Berta has his own music, and he's part of a band that I'm in. He's an amazing guitar player and a singer. And David Dabin, who is an amazing writer, among other things, an arranger, said about my song, All on Me, love, love, love this, Nick. Love this track and song. You sound amazing. Thank you for sharing. Amazing. Thank you for sharing. I mean, that means a lot. This is a guy who's doing great things in great places. So appreciate that. John Mervini, another guy I've played with who has been in Rec, actually, once, who's a singer-songwriter in his own right, loved the song Porch Step, which was the second single. And my actor friend, Melissa House, who co-founded a film company with me way, way back in 07, and we've both since left that company. She's doing her own thing now, Hot Angry Mom, which, check it out. It looks absolutely cool. Loved the third single from Kite to Camden, Twist My Kite. So thank you for all those compliments. If you're following along, the new single now is Almost Everything About You. And then there'll be, another single a week or two after this episode airs. And then probably a hiatus until the album comes out, but we shall see. But again, thank you for listening, and thank you for the comments. Let's get to some episodes. The Depeche Mode in New Order episode has gotten a lot of comments. And recently, since the last catch-up episode, there have been a few. Michael Banks 2401 says that both bands are great. Depeche Mode was not taken as seriously as the early days, but Martin Gore is a better songwriter, I guess, as compared to, you know, Bernard Sumner and all the people in New Order. Definitely, though, the most influential of the two would be New Order. And, you know, I sort of agree. I like both bands. I gravitate more towards Depeche Mode because I prefer their songs more and the vocals more. But I like the production of both of them for different reasons. And I will say that of the two, it's very likely that New Order has had more influence than Depeche Mode, production-wise. Michael Henry 2002 said, Depeche Mode and Depeche Mode. Love New Order, but Depeche is the greatest band in the universe. Dave Gahan, definitely the greatest frontman ever, and Martin Gore lyrics are unmatched. Now, even though Depeche Mode is not in my top 10, they're a heart artist for me, as I've mentioned before. Somebody I will always listen to anytime they release something. And I have a similar, if not quite as equal amount of enthusiasm for the songs and for the voice and for the production. Which brings me to the monolith that's happened this season, and that is the Duran Duran episode. There have been some more comments since the last catch-up episode. Pop Trash Inc. said, Midazolam and Pop Trash are considered the dark ages for Duran Duran. I think the albums are just simply awesome. Very much underrated. We call our band after the Pop Trash album. That's how awesome it is. And I listen to some of their music. You can see why, and it's pretty damn cool music. And they have awesome electro power pop music. And that's the thing I keep calling things electro power pop, Duran Duran and the Cars and any power pop band that uses electro heavily in its sound. Some of what found its way into the Wombats is another big one. And this band, Pop Trash, is now picking up on that phrase, electro power pop, which I haven't really been able to find anywhere else online. So I really appreciate that because you guys are doing some awesome electro power pop too. Stephen Winfield, 9657, said, what a fab retrospective about my favorite band, Duran Duran. I loved listening to you rave positive about their career highs and lows. I've stuck by them since I was a teenager in the 80s and usually love every album on release. The albums grab me instantly as they make incredible music. Nothing ever sounds uninteresting as there is always something new to enjoy. Duran Duran forever, X. Raven's Bow, 6890. I just finished John Taylor's autobiography and their albums and the choices made finally make sense. Sounds like something I should read. I like to think I fully appreciated their talent back in the day, but at 52, I'm finding myself rediscovering them and completely awed by what they brought to music. Me too. Nintendo Psycho said, Duran sucks now. Children's music now. They stopped making good music probably with the Wedding album. They became too bubblegummy after that. Now, here's something interesting. I find this really interesting. First of all, it's very common that a fan, or what I like to say is a so-called fan, will ditch a band after X album, which to me that means you can love a period of an artist's music but not necessarily be a fan of that artist. Nintendo Psycho is not a fan of Duran Duran. They're a fan of the music they made for 10 years or 13 years or whatever it is. Fine. That's fine. Now, you can agree or disagree as to what came after. What happened was they dropped off in popularity in the U.S. for quite a few years, which is one of the reasons why people's opinions are influenced because of the industry here being so disposable. But to say that they became too bubblegummy after that, to me, means something that I think happens with a lot of people. It's happened to me, which is that you lose touch with an artist and you might hear a song or two of theirs after a period that you dropped off. And you judge the entire following period by those couple of songs. Anyone who has listened to any Duran Duran after the Wedding album knows that bubblegummy would be the last thing to call the stuff they did. I mean, there were, of course, a few things that were intentionally so, but there were so many other things they did that, honestly, stuff they did in the 80s in some ways could be considered more bubblegummy. So, interesting comment. I'd love to hear a follow-up from you, Mr. Psycho, or Ms. Psycho. Margaret Shem Bridali, 5218, said, Duran Duran are the soundtrack of my life. The joy and happiness their upbeat music has brought to me and a bunch of my friends is thrilling. Get up and dance, even now in our middle age. I am so grateful. They don't know how much goodness they have contributed to this world. I agree with you. It was Seven and the Ragged Tiger that got me hooked forever. Yeah. Because that was just the age I was when that one came out. Joel Lerner, 1428, said, I've been with them since the beginning, straight until today. Excellent in-depth review. Awesome job. Thank you, Joel. And that's a true fan. You're more of a true fan, Duran Duran, than I am. And I really appreciate that. Welshie 1979, good episode. Hugely underrated for much of their career. Best band of all time. Gil Woodall, 8036. Duran Duran deserve a lot more credibility than they get. Been a Durani since 1981. They are my life after my family. Heart XX. I love that. I will say that the way you said that, though, makes me wonder if that's going to change someday. And I think you might want to examine that. Okay, 00 Aqua Shibby 3000, also known as Sean Hoke. I was born in 85, so they've literally been with me my entire life, and I've been a fan the whole time, always picking up albums and keeping up with them. Saw them live with Czar, T-S-A-R. That was a hell of a show. Medazzaland is my favorite DD album, which is something I've heard from a lot of people. When I was discovering their later albums and realized how much I liked that album, then you find a lot of what they call Durani's also loving that album more than the critics, more than people who aren't fans of them. So it's kind of cool to find other people like that. Michael, You've Got a Lot to Answer For is a song about Michael Hutchence, who had become a very dear friend of Simon's. Michael, You've Got a Lot to Answer For is a song about Michael Hutchence, who had become a very dear friend of Simon's, Simon Le Bon. Hutchence passed during the touring for the album, and the song was cut from the set list because it became too painful for Simon to sing. Sad face. I'd like to see you tackle the King's X catalog if you haven't before. So a couple things here. I did answer, Sean, and say, yes, I read about the Michael Hutchence song, and I said, I talked to him about how Stuck in a Moment You Can't Get Out of From U2 was also about Michael Hutchence. So a lot, it made a lot of people sad, you know, especially the people who were friends and family of his. And then the second thing is, I didn't know that they cut that song from the set list, so thank you for telling me that. That was actually a really cool tidbit to learn. I understand why. And the third thing is, just so you know, and I hope you are listening or watching, Sean, I do plan to do an episode on King's X. Because I don't know the band well, it requires more research, but I plan to listen to their entire catalog and do my summary and survey and retrospective, as I do with every band. The respect I give every topic that I give. Rest assured that before the end of season 6, I am going to do an episode on King's X, just so you know. Let's get to the next video, which was the episode I did on music magazines, and a frequent commenter, Burning Two Bridges, said, cool song at the end, which that song was a song called It's Almost Over from the Metro Grand Sessions. Thank you for listening to it, sticking around to the end. To me, it sounds like late 80s, early 90s indie college radio heyday, and that is an influence on me, so that totally makes sense. It's also a song I talked about in last week's episode on music videos, because it's the first video I ever made was for that song. Having said that, I did the thing music magazines are both best and worst at, comparing and categorizing artists. We like what we like, regardless of whether or not it fits into our preferred category. A music review won't change my opinion on what I like, and it's unlikely to make me like something I don't. But I can appreciate the musicianship, and that's where I find value from music magazines. I kind of agree. I mean, there are times where an article will compel me to listen to something I wouldn't have listened to, but the article itself isn't going to make me like it anymore. And there are times where I've actually learned, talked about this a little bit last week with the music videos, I've learned supplemental information about a song that wasn't in the song that might make me say, oh, yeah, interesting. Doesn't make me like it any better, but it's interesting to learn. But there are times where, like I said, it'll push me to listen to things that have become favorite things of mine. Steve Erickson, frequent guest. You saw him a couple weeks ago. We were talking about Pitchfork. It's been owned by Condé Nast since 2015, recently merged into GQ. Now, when it was bought by Condé Nast, that was already like seismic because Pitchfork was its own thing. And I wasn't a fan, but, you know, it was a big, it would say, you know, people would listen to it when it came to music, which, you know, screw them back then, but they're different now. That was a big thing. And now it just recently merged into GQ, and there's been huge layoffs of staff, including the chief editor, which is just another example of how publications are having a hard time, you know, on every level. Quick takes, number four. So my podcast with some, you know, reviews of albums, quick reviews of albums. Nunya Liz, who is someone I've had long conversations with predominantly about Duran Duran, said, geez, how long does it take you to prep for these? Sweaty face with the tongue out. And that's one of the reasons why I really hope all of you donate a dollar at patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, because it does take me a long time to research and write and do these. Back to her comment. That's a ton of material to go through. Dolly Parton's amazing. I totally remember her dramatized talking in her love songs way back when my monster mom watched her concerts on TV or listened to her albums. I know she did Stairway to Heaven, but did you see Andy Taylor and Robert Plant performing it together a couple of months ago, which would have been, I think, in late 2023 or early 2024? Totally awesome. Totally awesome. And that's cool. I watched it after that, Nanya Liz, and I got to say it was absolutely really cool. I think I might have mentioned that in the comment, but thanks for watching that. Quick takes. I love doing album reviews one way or another. Frequent commenter on the next episode, which was There's No Such Thing as a Heyday. Again, Burning Two Bridges, who seems to thankfully watch every episode. Hey, Burning Two Bridges, send me a message, because at some point when I can get some supporters on patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, I'm going to use some of that money and get you whatever t-shirt you want, because you're commenting all the time and I love it. Burning Two Bridges, I like your five criteria for No Such Thing as a Heyday, and it's fun to take an artist and look at their heyday in each category and to what extent they overlap, and then throw in personal taste, which may not overlap any heyday at all. Personally, I love X's See How We Are album as much as their other albums. Perfect example. Not a heyday in any category, except my opinion. My other thought is how to factor in label, influence, interference, indifference. Consider Mary's Danish, George Michael, Prince, etc. Wow. I don't know Mary's Danish, but I got to say with George Michael and Prince, we if you don't know those stories of how much the label influenced and interfered in their careers, you need to go find that. Which is why the FU stage can be so creatively interesting. And I think it's cool, first of all, that you agree that there is such a thing as an FU stage, because I've seen it in so many artists and I wondered if anybody else saw it. And that you say it's so creatively interesting, because to me it almost gets back to the point of the beginning of their career, but even more so, because at the beginning the pressure is, I want to do what it takes to succeed. And you may do things that are pushing you in ways you choose to, but don't necessarily fit your core. When you get to the FU stage, that's all you. So pretty cool. James Castelli on Facebook commented on this. Interesting idea. I guess it depends on your definition of heyday. Granted that not every artist experiences a constant level of fame, success, critical acclaim, etc., it seems that if such a thing as a heyday, if it exists, will be found among those highest peaks or peaks of significant duration. Well, I think since Joni Mitchell mentions it in one of her songs, Old Furry Sings the Blues, then it has to be a thing. The quote here is, W.C. Handy, I'm rich and I'm fey and I'm not familiar with what you played, but I get such strong impressions of your heyday. So pretty cool quote. Jim's my cousin. Jim is an awesome musician and music creator himself. And it's a cool conversation to have about whether or not there is an actual heyday. Check out that episode. Episode, my podfast on t-shirts, which, by the way, I'm wearing one of the t-shirts I sell. Give me $50,000. If you have $50,000 to spare, don't sit on it. Give it to an artist like me or just me. Cheryl Lundgren, 9685, said, I like all the shirts, but I like the hoodie the best. And I do have five different styles of shirts there. Two short sleeve, a long sleeve tee, a hoodie, and then a sweatshirt. And I actually have a hoodie that's a bluish hoodie with a certain kind of Wreck, my band Wreck graphic. So anyway. Okay. Death is Drum. My Death is Dumb series, Death is Drum, about dead drummers. I forgot a couple or found a couple. John Brooks, the Charlatans UK, died August 13, 2013 at the age of 44 from a brain tumor. And I had mentioned in that episode how unfortunately common brain tumors seem to be among drummers. Russell Batiste Jr., who drums for the Funky Meters, among others, died September 30th, 2023, at the age of 57 of a heart attack, and his cousin of the famed John Batiste. And then Burning Two Bridges, thank you again for watching and commenting, reminded me that Karen Carpenter died tragically, as we all know, but that she was also an excellent drummer. Not as well known for that, but anybody who knows enough about the Carpenters knows that that's, you know, when they started, she was the drummer. She drummed throughout her career in one way or another. Great addition. Thank you for reminding me. I should have added that for sure. We're going to do one more here, and then I'm going to take a quick break. Video game music. That was a fun episode to do. And thanks again to my kids for helping me out with that. Matt Conant, who is an amazing creator himself. I've done music for some of his projects way back, and you should definitely check out everything Matt Conant does. I'm not great at reading music, but my guess would be, and this he's talking about the graphic, Super Mario Brothers opening, and he got it right. That is correct. I used the Super Mario Brothers theme as the graphic, the notes of the graphic on the episode for video game music. And I lied, we're doing one more episode, and that's on the Kinks, which I had a lot of fun with because I love the Kinks. I just performed a song by them this past weekend with my band. Steve Erickson said, the late 70s Kinks felt like they were straining to be macho when they were almost 180 degrees away from the Rolling Stones back in the 60s. So pretty interesting that transition happened. And I think part of it was they were just trying out something new after having done some weird stuff in the mid-70s. Continuing the comment, I also heard that period of the band, the radio, far more than any other. The late 70s and early 80s must have been their peak of popularity in the U.S. In a lot of ways, it was. Because of Destroyer and Give the People What They Want album and then the Come Dancing and all of that. Although you have to give credit to like the mid-70s and then the early 70s with Lola. So there were kind of three periods of popularity for the Kinks in the U.S. But good points, absolutely. And a perfect time to take a break. So check out the mid-roll, donate if you can, and I will be back in just a couple of minutes. Hey, so I was going to do the usual and just list all of the links that I'd love for you to check out, but I realized that everything you need to know and everywhere you need to go is at nickdimatteo.com. That really is the hub. I list all the links in every episode just in case, but nickdimatteo.com is where I put everything that I do. If you want to know more about this podcast, whether it's the audio version or the YouTube version at youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre or wherever else the podcast shows up, or if you want to support the podcast at patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, just go to nickdimatteo.com. It's all there. If you want to check out my full discography of original music and covers for my band Rec, REC, and beyond, it's at nickdimatteo.com, including all the streaming and social links for wherever you listen to music and wherever you check out your soch. My acting clips are there. My voiceover clips are there. Graphic design, my blog, and most especially, it's the best place to contact me. If you go to nickdimatteo.com/contact or just hit the contact is on every single page, you can send me a note, say hello, ask me any questions you'd like. You get a newsletter a few times a month, and if you have a project of your own and need work done for it, whether it's audio editing or music or voiceover or graphic design, or if you have an event and you need live music, go to nickdimatteo.com, contact me, say hello, let me know what you need. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show. We have returned. Thanks for checking out that mid-roll or scrolling through it just to get to the part you love the best. Either one is fine with me. So this one, the reason why I stopped here is because the next thing we're talking about is kind of the main theme of this catch-up episode, which is fan economics or economics in general. And that's because I did a few posts on this, two podcasts on the $50,000 manifesto, check the shirt, and a couple of MXG minutes, which you'll see here on youtube.com/musicisnotagenre, one of which was on tipping. And that got a lot of conversation going, and I love that. Karen, my sister-in-law, said, as far as tipping, or we could just pay people a living wage, not a subsistence wage, a living one where you can have health care, vacations, PTO, personal time off, retirement, etc., etc., etc. Dreaming big here. If you're adjusting for inflation, previous year's wages went farther. Wages haven't increased to keep up with the times, so that tip for that cup of coffee is basically making up part of the difference. Go get Howard Schultz. And if you're old enough, you remember who Howard Schultz is. Excellent point, Karen. Cheryl, who happens to be Karen's mother, so my mother-in-law, Tipping used to be for exceptional service, but now I think it's more to give them a fair wage. With that said, who are you including in the service industry? Because I'm not sure just pouring me a cup of coffee and handing it to me deserves a tip. That's basically just doing your job, right? So the reason that we're tipping is to make up for the employer not paying a fair wage or benefits to the employee. The truth is that the tip doesn't come close to making up for that lack. And as consumers, we don't want to pay the true cost of a product if the employer did offer fair pay and benefits to their employees. We go out to dinner. We normally, well, I'm going to stop there a second. There's an excellent point in there in that we as consumers are now used to paying crap for everything. You go to a dollar store and get amazing stuff, but that's because there are people who are manufacturing and distributing it who aren't getting paid well enough. The people who work at that store aren't getting paid well enough. And we're reaping the benefits by everything being so cheap. When it comes to other things like coffee, which is not necessarily cheap, you're talking about a supply chain issue or the difficulty that the difficulties of running a business and how much overhead it is. That is an actual factor. But I would say a bigger factor in a lot of these, and more so bigger businesses, but some small, is that a lot of the people at the top of the chain are taking more than they need to and not reinvesting it in the business, which is where it would go to help employees and the consumers, us, and the even to, you know, make it better as far as buying the products and all of those things. So a lot of great points there. Continuing the comment, we go out to dinner, we normally tip 20 to 25%. Something off the shelf, maybe it's a lot of stuff, but but if it's just a donut, no. And if this is a protest, you're taking it out on staffed. You're totally correct that it will only affect the employee, not anyone else. Protest in a more effective way. Be willing to pay the price for decent wages for staff. And this is the hard part. I don't think that we, as people, the reason why I wrote the $50,000 manifesto was because one of the reasons was because I was saying that we shouldn't have to subsidize each other. The people who already have the money, organizations and people, should be distributing it well enough to where we all have enough to live, as opposed to one person in need helping another person in need, which is what we're doing when we're tipping. But if you deny that person the tip, then all your protest is really doing is denying that person money. It's not going to affect the business or people who own the business at all. More from Cheryl. It's a really good point about the times we worked in, Nick. I got my first full-time job at 19 and I got paid minimum wage, which was $1.65 an hour. That was 1968. But with that wage, I was able to afford my own studio apartment in downtown Palm Springs and food and etc. It certainly wasn't a luxury hotel, but it was good for me. $75 a month included utilities. That was the rent. Lee and I bought our first home in 1976. We paid $20,000 no down. The owner took back a small note for the difference between their loan, which we assumed, and the $20,000. We closed escrow in 3 weeks. It was a three-bedroom, two-bath home on the cul-de-sac where Lee's parents lived. Times have changed so much. You can barely afford to buy food now, much less own a home or a car or retire. I can vouch for that. I don't know how people making minimum wage can live. And P.S., delivery drivers usually don't get tipped, much less 20%. I know how privileged I was to grow up in an era when jobs were plentiful and easy to find. I've always had the attitude that I would not take crap on a job because I could always go out and get a different one tomorrow. And usually that job paid more than the one I was in. I truly don't know how people make it today. Even if you're lucky to find a good paying full-time job, they don't normally come with good leave benefits or retirement. I hated working in education, but I loved the benefits in retirement. I love that you are... And then she's talking about me now. So let's wait. Before I get to that part, what a great point. And it's something that I said, but she fleshed out, which is that things are so different now that it is impossible for most people to own or do the simplest things that people did in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 60s, whatever you want to call it. And I don't necessarily need to flesh that out anymore. She closes by saying, I love that you, meaning me, are so good at self-promotion and are an entrepreneur. That's what you need to be successful now, not to mention the perseverance you need to achieve your goals. I would agree with all that, except for the fact about me being good at self-promotion, because I think if that were true, then I wouldn't have to be wondering if this podcast needs to end at the end of this season. But, you know, you don't have to be good at everything. You just have to find the right people who are good at it. And that's one of my hopes. If you contribute at patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, literally $1 a month, then I might be able to afford someone who will help me promote this, which will then give it its own life. And it will negate the need for lovely people like you to help support what I do. So please consider that. Paul Brick, bandmate, an erstwhile bandmate. We had a conversation about tipping when we were in Florida doing a gig, and that's sort of where it stemmed from. He said, oh boy, I remember this conversation. My take, or at least what I attempted to convey, was tipping should always be standard for any employee that is considered by the U.S. Department of Labor as a tipped employee. Meaning legally they are paid less than minimum wage because a large portion of their pay comes from tips. Waiter, waitress, food delivery driver. I'm tipping at least 20% for good service if I'm at a restaurant. But if someone is making a sub or putting cream cheese on a bagel and not technically considered a tipped employee, I don't believe a tip is necessary. If you develop a relationship, like you said, with a barista, receive great service, etc., you're leaving the mailman a few bucks on the holidays. Of course, that's a nice gesture and is certainly appropriate. But the truth is you're subsidizing companies or labor laws that are not paying a fair wage to employees if you're doing that all the time, even if it's out of pity and kindness. But think of how many digital checkout systems prompt for a tip, putting pressure on the purchaser. So I agree that we're subsidizing. I don't agree that stopping is the right answer only because the alternative is those people who, yes, they're making standard minimum wage. We all know that's not enough to live. And if we as humans can help, as opposed to, I always believe humanity is more important than ideology. So your ideology might be, F these companies, we shouldn't be subsidizing them. But here humanity might say, but this person in front of me is in need. And that's the conflict there. Both are correct. Both are correct. And you make a choice based on how you feel. And I do agree that the pressure of those digital systems can sometimes be overwhelming and you've seen a backlash. And I think you just need to make individual judgments and hopefully you make the one that makes the most sense in the situation and is the most charitable you can be. Calling lower wage workers powerless is a disservice to them and their autonomy as employees. Labor laws only change when employees enter, consumers take a stand, walk out, etc. True. And I don't, I think powerless is a strong word. I would say not as much power as they should have, because if it was true that they had all the power they needed, then labor laws would be better and unions would be stronger and wages would be higher. But there have been plenty of times where employees have staged things that have benefited them eventually and other times where they haven't. And they've just done an end run and hired other people or didn't make the change they wanted. And that's because the system does not allow for them to have the power that they really need to make those changes. But I also agree if we all band together as employees and consumers that we can make a change. And he agrees with me. It's a broken system and a difficult issue. But that inflation affects everyone. All workers, whether it's a salaried position or hourly, have less purchasing power compared to a few years ago. Damn right, Paul, they do. The dollar doesn't go as far for everyone. So we're suffering too. It's hard to want to tip somebody when that extra dollar helps you too. So it's a tough decision to make. Not always tipping hourly workers that don't technically rely on tips may not be the best form of so-called protest, I'll agree. So cool. But continuing to feed the current system ensures things will definitely, and I get it. How frustrating that is. None of us want to have to feed this system. But what do we do in the meantime when the people who are a part of the system as much as we are and who are trying their best to make ends meet are struggling, you know? And I guess what I'll say is this. If you have the extra money, this shouldn't even be a discussion. If you have enough money to spare that an extra 10%, 15%, 20%, whatever, doesn't really impact you, then Nike that shit. Just do it. Just do it. Because the money doesn't affect you the way it will affect the people you're giving it to. If you are struggling as well, that's a different consideration to make. Paul continues, probably the most effective strategy is don't spend your money at a business that doesn't pay their workers fairly, eventually hurting the company's sales, which will either drive them out of business or force them to pay workers more Agreed. As consumers, it's our duty to support businesses that treat their employees well. That's the beauty of a free market. The only part that's hard for that is if you're a person who's like, the only job I can get is with this crappy company, then you're kind of screwed on both sides. But, you know, what can you do? Companies respond to consumer behavior to protect sales. It's messy for sure, but nothing changes if nothing changes. I couldn't agree more. Sorry for the novel, but I wanted to be clear on what was said. Great topic, though, that needs to be discussed and addressed. Paul, you're awesome for putting so many thoughts into this. I absolutely applaud you for writing everything you wrote, and thank you. Related to that, my MXG Minute on the economy. My cousin, Renee, said, no, the economics reports all lie. Personally, I'm feeling strangled by the prices of everything. It's all lies and BS, in my opinion. My mother-in-law concurs, just walk through any grocery store and then answer this. And the question was, is the economy healthy? And they both say no. And I have to agree. So my $50,000 episode, the first one, Drake Monroe on YouTube said, I sent you $50,000, but it's all in Prussian francs. Drake, thank you, first of all. Secondly, I haven't received it yet. I imagine that it's in the mail somewhere, and I'm, or if it's a direct deposit, it's taking long because, you know, internet's slow for the past several weeks. Totally get it. If you want to rescind the Prussian francs and then do it again in like US dollars, I am absolutely cool with that, but that's totally your decision. Which brings us to the end of the economic discussion, hopefully, for this episode and to the next episode discussion, which is a recent one. It's on Two Hit Wonders. It was a real fun one for me. I saw on a forum that was about One Hit Wonders a meme on Bonnie Tyler, who did Total Eclipse of the Heart. And I was like, okay, I have enough of a memory to know she's not a one-hit wonder, because she said she did I Need a Hero, which was a top 40 song. There was also another top 40 song earlier on in her career, and she had more in the top 100. This is why I did that episode. Bonnie Tyler was not a one-hit wonder. You need to know this stuff. Dave Andrea Howard, 8203, on Two Hit Wonders said, Big Country or Scottish, great video. Keep up the good work. Thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for telling me Big Country or Scottish. I keep mixing it up. I said I thought they were Canadian when I was young. And then they must be Australian. I was also incorrect within that episode. And you corrected me and said that they are Scottish, which makes sense in their sound, too, if you know, music from Scotland from that era. Burning Two Bridges, Stalwart, I love you. On Two Hit Wonders, a couple that come to mind are Glass Tiger, who did Don't Forget Me When I'm Gone, and there was another top 40 hit as well, and two other in the top 100. Enya, who had three top 40 hits and two more top 100. But how about no hit wonder, Violent Femmes? Man, you're right up my alley, Burning Two Bridges, one of my favorite bands. And a special shout out to X, who should have had more hits. And it's kind of like what I said at the end of that episode where I listed a bunch of artists who we know as super famous, like Jimi Hendrix and all, who didn't have top 40, hit zero. There were zero hit wonders, but they're now legends. And I understand why you would put X in a category like that. My dad does not agree that some of who I listed on Two Hit Wonders qualify as Two Hit Wonders because they're either not top 40 or not memorable. Kind of why I did it, because I think the criteria should be changed, because I think from the perspective of an artist and a fan even, those people have more than one hit, and that those perspectives are frankly more important than the industry or the people who say what should or shouldn't be on the charts. All right. There's another podcaster out there. I'm not going to say the name, major YouTube star in the music commentary realm. I was listening to a couple of episodes of his, in the car when we were on our way to a gig. He centers his stuff on nostalgia for the 80s. And there were some damn interesting stories, really interesting stories. Not a lot of reinterpretation, which is not his thing. A lot of nostalgia, which is not my thing. I'm not a huge fan of that angle of things, which you may know from having listened to or watched any of these episodes. I understand its value to people, and I know why it's out there. I also think it's an easy sell, and I think what I do is a much harder sell. So, and I don't do it because it's a hard sell. I do it because this is the angle that I believe hasn't been done before and needs doing, and it's the one that I'm most passionate about. Which brings me to the end of this episode and the featured song. This featured song is the newest single. There will be another one very soon, but the newest single from a band, Rec, R-E-C, and it's called Twist My Kite. And the reason I chose this one is A, because it is the new single and I want you all to hear it. It's streaming everywhere. Please click the link and stick around and listen to it at the end of this episode. Also because there's some lyrics in there that talk about what's worth wasting time on? Is it money? This is an economic episode in some ways. Is this podcast worth wasting your time on? Is it worth wasting my time on? Still figuring that out. We're all still figuring this out, aren't we? You know, is work worth wasting your time on? What things do you feel are the good kind of wasting, which is you're doing something fun that you don't need to do, but you're doing it anyway, or the bad kind of wasting where you're doing something that you have to do or have been told you have to do, and it's taking away time from things that are more valuable to your life? That's the question that Twist My Kite asks you, but it does it in a way that makes you want to get up and dance and celebrate. So please stick around. Listen to that. The only questions I have for you are, what do you think of any of this? As always, keep sending me comments. There's no bonus episode for this because the bonus for a catch-up episode is you coming to patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, donating $1 a month to support this podcast and the music I do. And you get to comment, and not just comment and have exclusive content, but you get to tell me what other episodes I should be doing if there is a season 7. So thank you, as always. Thank you, everybody who was featured in this episode, for your comments, for your watching, for your listening. It makes all of this worthwhile. And thank you, everyone else out there as well, for watching and listening. As always, my objectives here are conversation and music and connection in whatever order I usually put them in. I will talk to you next week.
This is supposed to be my life. Don't wanna go, no, you're wasting my life.